trouble. I'm going to get the money for the lessons, and I wouldn't want to take them from anybody but you, Signor Mascagni. I'll come back to you just as soon as I can. Thank you very, very much. Please, girls, I'd like to leave now. As Allison rushed toward the front door, Signor Mascagni detained Nancy and Grace.
"This Allison, she is wonderful," he exclaimed. "I want to give her lessons to see that her training is correct."
He threw up his hands and shook his head.
"But I cannot afford to give the lessons free. Perhaps I could cut my price."
"We'll find the money somehow, Signor," Nancy promised. Then she and Grace thanked the teacher and followed Allison outside. At the Drew home that evening, there were mixed emotions on everyone's part. Hannah Gruen had taken a great fancy to the Hoover sisters, and the news of Allison's talent had thrilled her as well as the girls. Conversation at supper was gay and animated. Nancy and Mrs. Gruen drove the sisters to their farm, and on parting, Nancy again promised to do all she could to help find a will from which the girls might possibly benefit. But figuring out how to do this became a problem that seemed insurmountable to Nancy. At breakfast the following day, Mr. Drew suggested, "Nancy, perhaps if you'd give your mind a little rest from the Crowley matter, an inspiration about the case might come to you." His daughter smiled. "Good idea, Dad. I think I'll take a walk in the fresh air and clear the cobwebs from my brain." As soon as she finished eating, Nancy set out at a brisk pace. She headed for River Heights Attractive Park to view the display of roses, which was always very beautiful. She had gone only a short distance along one of the paths when she caught sight of Isabel and Ada Topham seated on a bench not far ahead. "They're the last people in the world I want to see right now," Nancy thought. "They'll probably say something mean to me and I'll lose my temper. When I think how Grace and Allison and the Turners could use just one-tenth of the Crowley money which the Tophams are going to inherit, I could just burst." Nancy had paused, wondering whether she should turn back. "No," she told herself. "I'll go on to see the roses. I'll take that path back of the Tophams, and they won't notice me." Nancy made her way along quietly, with no intention of eavesdropping on the two girls. But suddenly, two words of their conversation came to her ears, bringing Nancy to an involuntary halt. She had distinctly heard Isabel say, "The will." In a flash, Nancy's detective instincts were aroused, and her heart pounded excitedly. "It must be Josiah Crowley's will they're talking about," she reasoned. Chapter 7. The Angry Dog. With the instinct of a detective who dared not miss a clue, Nancy deliberately moved closer to the bench on which the Topham girls were seated. "If there should be another will, I'm afraid we'd be out of luck." The words in Ada's nasal voice came clearly to Nancy. Isabel's reply was in so low a tone that the young sleuth could just manage to catch the words. "Well, I, for one, don't believe Josiah Crowley ever made a later will." She gave a low laugh. "Mother watched him like a hawk." "Or thought she did," Isabel retorted. "The old man got out of her clutches several times, don't forget." "Yes. And what's worse, I'm sure Nancy Drew thinks he made a later will. That's why she's taking such an interest in those Hoover girls. I actually saw them go into Mr. Drew's office yesterday, and it wasn't to deliver eggs. If Nancy gets her father interested, he might dig up another will. Oh, how I hate that interfering girl." At this, Nancy could barely refrain from laughing. So the Tophams were concerned about the existence of a second will. With bated breath, she listened further. "You're such a worrywart, Ada. You can trust Dad and Mother to take care of things, no matter what happens," Isabel commented dryly. "They won't let that pile of money get away from us. It's ours by right, anyhow." "You've got something there," Ada conceded. "We should have old Josiah's money after supporting and putting up with him for 3 years. That was pretty clever of Mother, never accepting any board money from Josiah Crowley." The conversation ended as Isabel and Ada arose from the bench and walked away. Nancy waited until they were out of sight, then emerged from her hiding place. Seating herself on the bench vacated by the Topham sisters, Nancy mulled over the remarks she had just overheard. "There's no doubt in my mind now that if there is a later will, the Tophams haven't destroyed it. How thrilling! But where can it be?" Nancy realized that to find it was a real challenge, and I'd better hurry up before the Tophams stumble on it. For another 10 minutes, Nancy sat lost in thought, sifting all the facts she had gleaned so far. "There must be some clue I've overlooked," she told herself. Suddenly, with a cry of delight, she sprang to her feet. "Why didn't I think of that before?
The Hoover girls and the Turners aren't the only ones who should have figured in this will. There are other relatives of Mr. Crowley who have filed a claim. I wonder who they are. If I could only talk with them, I might pick up a clue.
Immediately, Nancy set off for her father's office. He was engaged in an important conference when she arrived, and she had to wait 10 minutes before being admitted to the inner office.
"Now what?" Mr. Drew asked, smiling, as she burst in upon him.
"Have you solved the mystery, or is your purse in need of a little change?"
Nancy's cheeks were flushed and her eyes danced with excitement. "Don't tease me," she protested. "I need some information."
"At your service, Nancy."
The young sleuth poured out the story of the Topham sisters' conversation in the park and told him of her own conclusions. Mr. Drew listened with interest until she had finished.
"Excellent deducting," he praised his daughter.
"I'm afraid, though, I can't help you obtain the relatives' names. I don't know any of them."
Nancy looked disappointed.
"Oh, dear," she sighed. "And I'm so anxious to find out right away. If I delay even a single day, the Tophams may locate that other will and destroy it."
The next instant her face brightened.
"I know. I'll drive out and see the Turner sisters. They might be able to tell me who the other relatives are."
Nancy arose and headed for the door.
"Just a minute," said the lawyer.
"I wonder if you realize just what you're getting into, Nancy?"
"What do you mean?"
"Only this. Detective work isn't always the safest occupation in which to engage. I happen to know that Richard Topham is an unpleasant man when crossed. If you do find out anything which may frustrate him, the entire Topham family could make things extremely difficult for you."
"I'm not afraid of them, Dad."
"Good," Mr. Drew exclaimed. "I was hoping you would say that. I'm glad you have the courage of your convictions, but I didn't want you to march off into battle without a knowledge of what you might be up against."
"Battle?"
"Yes. The Tophams won't give up the fortune without a bitter struggle. However, if they attempt to make serious trouble, I promise to deal with them myself."
"And if I do find the will?"
"I'll take the matter into court."
"Oh, thank you. There's no one like you in all the world."
After leaving her father's office, Nancy went directly home to get her car. When she told Hannah Gruen her plans, the housekeeper warned, "Don't become too deeply involved in this matter, dear. In your zeal to help other people, you may forget to be on your guard."
"I promise to be as careful as a pussycat walking up a slippery roof," Nancy assured the housekeeper with a grin, and left the house.
Quickly backing her car from the garage, she set off in the direction of the Turner home. The miles seemed to melt away as Nancy's thoughts raced from one idea to another. Before the young sleuth knew it, she had reached the house.
"Hi, Judy," she called to the little girl, who was playing in the yard with a midget badminton set. The child looked very cunning in a pink play suit. The hand-embroidered teddy bears on it were surely the work of her loving aunts.
"Hi, Nancy. I'm glad you came. Now I'll have somebody to play with," Judy said, running up to the visitor.
Obligingly, Nancy took a racket and batted the feathered shuttlecock toward the child.
"Hit the birdie," she called.
Judy missed, but picked up the shuttlecock and whammed it nicely across the net. Nancy hit it back, and this time the little girl caught the birdie on her racket and sent it over. The game went on for several minutes, with Judy crying out in delight.
"You're the bestest batter I ever played with, Nancy," she declared.
After 10 minutes of play, Nancy said, "Let's go into the house now, Judy. I want to talk to your aunties." Judy skipped ahead and announced her new playmate's arrival.
"Hello, Nancy," the woman said as she entered the living room. "We were watching the game from the window," said Mary Turner. "This is a real thrill for Judy. Ed and I are very poor at hitting the birdie."
"It was lots of fun," Nancy replied. "I'm glad to see you all again."
She now asked whether the police had located the thieves who had taken the silver heirlooms from the house.
"Not yet," Mary answered. "And what's worse, we found that several other pieces had been taken, too."
"What a shame," Nancy exclaimed. "But I'm sure the stolen articles will be found."
Then she added, "I came here on a particular mission."
"Yes?"
"Your story about Mr. Josiah Crowley intrigued me. Then, the other day, I met two girls, Grace and Allison Hoover, who told me of a similar promise from him regarding his will."
"How amazing," Edna Turner exclaimed.
"I heard Josiah mention the Hoovers and Allison's beautiful voice."
"Dad and I have become very much interested in the case and are inclined to agree with you and the Hoovers that Mr. Crowley may have written another will shortly before his death and hidden it someplace."
"Oh, wouldn't it be wonderful if such a will could be found?" Mary exclaimed. "It might mean all the difference in the world to Judy's future."
"What I want to do," Nancy went on,
is talk to as many of Mr. Crowley's relatives as I can find. Some place I may pick up a clue to where a more recent will is hidden. Tell me, do any of his other relatives live around here?
Yes, three that I can think of, Edna answered.
She went on to say that two cousins, who had never married, lived on a farm just outside Titusville. Their names are Fred and William Matthews. Suddenly, the Turner sisters blushed a deep pink. They glanced at each other, then back at Nancy. Finally, Edna said,
Many years ago, Fred proposed to Mary and William to me, and we came near accepting. But just at that time, we had the great tragedy in the family and took Judy's mother to rear, so we decided not to marry.
An embarrassing pause was broken by Judy.
Someday, my aunties are going to give me one of my mother's dollies, Nancy. Isn't that nice?
It certainly is, Nancy agreed, and you must be sure to show it to me. Then she asked the sisters, What relation are the Matthews to Mr. Crowley?
First cousins on his mother's side.
Do you think they would mind my asking them some questions, even though I'm a stranger?
Not at all, Mary replied. They're very fine gentlemen.
And tell them Mary and I sent you, Edna added. How far is Titusville from here? Nancy inquired.
Oh, not more than 5 miles on Route 10A. You could drive there in a few minutes. It's on the way to Masonville. Nancy, won't you stay and have lunch with us?
Eager to continue her work, the young sleuth was about to refuse, but Judy put in an invitation also.
Please, oh please, Nancy, and while my aunties are fixing it, you and I can play badminton.
All right, Nancy agreed, and thank you very much. It was nearly 2 o'clock when she finally was ready to depart.
Oh, Mary, said Edna suddenly, we forgot to tell Nancy about Josiah's wife's cousin, Mrs. Abby Rowan. She'd be apt to know more about the will than anyone else.
That's right. You really should call on her, Nancy. She took care of Josiah one time when he was sick, and he thought the world of her. He often declared he intended to leave her something. She's a widow and has very little.
Even a few $1,000 would mean a lot to her, Edna added. Abby must be over 80 years of age and growing forgetful. She has no children and there's no one to look after her.
Where shall I find Mrs. Rowan? Nancy asked, hoping it was not far away.
Abby lives on the Westlake Road, Edna responded. It's a good many miles from here.
Then I shan't have time to go there today, the young sleuth said, but I'll surely see her as soon as I can, and now I must be going. Nancy thanked the Turner sisters and said goodbye. But before she could leave, Judy insisted upon showing how she could jump rope and do all kinds of dancing steps with a hoop on the lawn.
Judy entertains us all the time, Mary remarked. We believe she's very talented.
Nancy thought so, too.
As she drove off, she again hoped that money would become available for a very special education for Judy.
After Nancy had gone 5 miles along the designated route, she began to watch the mailboxes. Soon she noticed one which bore the name Matthews. The farmhouse stood back a distance from the road and had a wide sweep of lawn in front of it. Near the house, a man was riding a small tractor, mowing the grass. Nancy drove down the narrow lane which led into the grounds and stopped opposite the spot where the man was working. The man's back was toward her, and he apparently had not heard the car above the noise of the tractor, so she waited. Looking toward the house, Nancy suddenly saw a sight that appalled her. Wedged between two stones of a broken wall was a police dog puppy whining pitifully. Nancy dashed forward and released the little animal. As it continued to whimper, she cuddled the pup in her arms and began to examine its paws.
"Why, you poor thing," Nancy said, seeing a tear in the flesh of one hind leg. "This must be taken care of right away."
She decided to carry the puppy over to the man on the mower. As Nancy walked across the lane, she suddenly heard an angry growl near her. Looking back, she saw a huge police dog, evidently the pup's mother, bounding toward her.
"It's all right," Nancy called soothingly to the dog. "I'm not going to take your baby away."
She took 2 more strides, but got no farther. With a fierce snarl, the dog leaped on Nancy, knocking her flat. Chapter 8. A Forgotten Secret. Nancy screamed for help, hoping to attract the farmer's attention. She expected momentarily to be bitten by the angry dog, but to her great relief, the animal did not harm her. The young sleuth's sudden fall had caused the puppy to fly from her arms. With a leap, its mother was at the pup's side. She grabbed her baby by the back of its neck and trotted off toward the barn.
Oh, That was a narrow escape. Nancy took a deep breath as she got to her feet, brushed herself off, and ruefully surveyed a tear in her sweater. By this time, the man on the tractor, having changed direction, saw the fracas and came running. He apologized for the dog's actions, but Nancy said quickly, "It was my fault. I should have set the pup down. Its mother probably thought I was trying to dog-nap her baby."
"Possibly."
Nancy explained why she had picked up the little animal, and the farmer said he would look at the cut later.
"I'm glad you weren't hurt," he added. "Thanks for being such a good scout about it. Did you come to see me or my brother?" he asked. "I'm Fred Matthews."
Nancy gave her name, and added that she was acquainted with the Turner sisters and others who had been told they would benefit under Josiah Crowley's will. "My dad, the lawyer Carson Drew, and I are working on the case. We believe there might have been a later will than the one presented by Mr. Topham, and we'd like to find it."
"And you came to see if William and I could give you a clue."
Fred's bright blue eyes sparkled boyishly. "That's right, Mr. Matthews. Also, did Mr. Crowley ever tell you he was going to leave you some money?"
"Indeed he did."
At this moment, another man came from the house, and Fred introduced him as his brother William. Both were tall, spare, and strong-muscled. Though their hair was gray, the men's faces were youthful and unwrinkled.
"Let's sit down under the tree here and discuss this," Fred suggested, leading the way to a group of rustic chairs.
He told William of Nancy's request, then asked him,
"Did Cousin Josiah ever give you any idea he'd made a will in which we were not beneficiaries?"
"No. I thought one would come to light when he died. To tell the truth, Miss Drew, Fred and I were thunderstruck at the will which left everything to the Tophams. That wasn't what Cousin Josiah led us to believe."
"It certainly wasn't," Fred spoke up. "But I guess William and I counted our chickens before they were hatched. We just about make ends meet here with our small fruit farm. Help and equipment cost such a lot. One thing we've always wanted to do, but couldn't afford, was to travel. We thought we'd use the money from Cousin Josiah to do that. But our dream bubble burst," said William. "No trips for us."
Nancy smiled. "Don't give up hope yet. Dad and I haven't." She was disappointed that the brothers could offer her no clues about a place to look for another will. A little while later, she left the farm and returned home. "No new evidence," she told her father. "Let's hope Mrs. Abby Rowan has some." Early the next morning, she set off for the elderly woman's home and reached her destination by asking directions of people living along Westlake Road. "This must be Abby Rowan's house," Nancy told herself. "It fits the description." She climbed out of her car and stood before the one-story frame building, which was badly in need of paint and repair. The yard around it was overgrown with weeds, and the picket fence enclosing the cottage sagged dejectedly. "The place looks deserted," Nancy mused, "but I'll see if Mrs. Rowan is at home." Nancy made her way up the scraggly path to the house and rapped on the front door. There was no response. After a moment, she knocked again. This time, a muffled voice called,
"Who's there?" "If you're a peddler, I don't want anything."
"I'm not selling anything," Nancy called out reassuringly. "Won't you let me in, please?" There was a long silence. Then the quavering voice replied,
"I can't open the door. I've hurt myself and can't walk."
Nancy hesitated an instant before pushing open the door. As she stepped into the dreary living room, she saw a frail figure on the couch. Abby Rowan lay huddled under an old shawl, her withered face drawn with pain.
"I'm Nancy Drew, and I've come to help you, Mrs. Rowan."
The old lady turned her head and regarded Nancy with a stare of wonder.
"You've come to help me?" she repeated unbelievingly. "I didn't think anyone would ever bother about old Abby again.
Here, let me arrange the pillows for you." Gently, Nancy moved the old woman into a more comfortable position.
"Yesterday I fell down the cellar stairs," Mrs. Rowan explained. "I hurt my hip and sprained my ankle."
"Haven't you had a doctor?" Nancy asked in astonishment.
"No," Abby Rowan sighed. "Not a soul has been here, and I couldn't get in touch with anybody. I have no telephone."
"Can you walk at all?" Nancy asked.
"A little."
"Then your hip isn't broken," Nancy said in relief. "Let me see your ankle."
"Oh, my, it is swollen. I'll bandage it for you." "There's a clean cloth in the closet in the kitchen," Abby told her. "I haven't any regular bandage." You really should have a doctor, Nancy remarked. Let me drive you to one.
I can't afford it, the old woman murmured. My pension check hasn't come, and it's too small anyway.
Let me pay the doctor, Nancy offered.
Abby Rowan shook her head stubbornly. I'll not take charity. I'd rather die first.
Well, if you insist upon not having a doctor, I'm going to the nearest drugstore and get some bandaging and a few other things, Nancy told her. But before I go, I'll make you a cup of tea.
There's no tea in the house.
Then I'll get a box. What else do you need?
I need most everything, but I can't afford anything right now.
You might get me some tea and a loaf of bread. That's enough. You'll find the money in a jar in the cupboard. It's not very much, but it's all I have.
I'll be back in a few minutes, Nancy promised.
She stopped in the kitchen long enough to examine the cupboards. With the exception of a little flour and sugar and a can of soup, there appeared to be nothing in the house to eat. Nancy found that the money jar contained less than $5.
I'll not take any of it, she decided.
Quietly, the young sleuth slipped out the back door. She drove quickly to the nearest store and ordered a stock of groceries. Then she stopped at a drugstore and purchased bandages and liniment. Reaching the cottage, she carried the supplies inside and adeptly set about making Abby Rowan more comfortable. She bathed the swollen ankle and bound it neatly with the antiseptic bandage.
It feels better already, Mrs. Rowan told her gratefully. I don't know what would have happened to me if you hadn't come.
Oh, someone would have dropped in, said Nancy cheerfully. She went to the kitchen and in a short while prepared tea and a light lunch for the elderly woman. As Abby Rowan ate the nourishing meal, Nancy was gratified to observe that almost immediately her patient became more cheerful and seemed to gain strength. She sat up on the couch and appeared eager to talk with Nancy.
There aren't many folks willing to come in and help an old lady. If Josiah Crowley had lived, things would have been different, she declared. I could have paid someone to look after me.
It's strange that he didn't provide for you in his will, Nancy replied quietly. She did not wish to excite the woman by telling her real mission, yet Nancy hoped that she might lead her tactfully into a discussion of Josiah Crowley's affairs without raising hopes which might never be realized.
It's my opinion that Josiah did provide for me, Mrs. Rowan returned emphatically. Many a time he said to me, Abby, you'll never need to worry. When I'm gone, you'll be well taken care of by my will.
And then everything was left to the Tophams. Nancy encouraged her to proceed.
That was according to the first will, Abby Rowan stated.
You mean there was another will? Nancy inquired eagerly.
Of course. Why, I saw that will with my own eyes.
You saw it? Nancy gasped. The old woman nodded gravely.
Mind, I didn't see what was in the will. One day Josiah came to call and give me some money. Right off, I noticed he had a bunch of papers in his hand. Abby, he said, I've made a new will. I didn't bother with a lawyer. I wrote it myself.
How long ago was that? Nancy asked quickly.
Let me see, Abby Rowan frowned thoughtfully. I can't remember the exact date. It was this past spring. Anyway, Josiah hinted that he'd done well by me.
But Josiah, I said, are you sure it's legal to write it yourself?
Of course it is, he said. A lawyer told me it was all right just so long as I wrote it myself and signed it. But I did have it witnessed.
Do you know who witnessed the will? Nancy broke in.
No, he didn't say.
Haven't you any idea what became of the will? Nancy asked hopefully.
Well, I remember Josiah did say something about putting it where nobody could get it unless they had legal authority. But I really don't know what became of it.
Are you certain that was all Mr. Crowley said? Nancy inquired gently. She recalled the Turners saying that Abby had become forgetful. The elderly woman shook her head and sighed.
Many a night I've lain awake trying to think what else he did say about where he would put the will. I just can't recollect.
Try to think, Nancy begged.
I can't remember, Abby Rowan murmured hopelessly. I've tried and tried.
She leaned against the cushions and closed her eyes as though the effort had exhausted her. At that very moment, the clock on the mantel chimed 12. Abby's eyes fluttered open, and an odd expression passed over her face. For an instant, she stared straight before her, then slowly turned her head and fastened her eyes on the clock. Chapter 9. Helpful Disclosures.
Nancy watched Abby Rowan intently as the mantel clock finished striking. The elderly woman's lips had begun to move.
"The clock," she whispered. "That was it, the clock."
Nancy gripped the arms of her chair in excitement. "Josiah Crowley hid the will in a clock?" she prompted.
"No, no, it wasn't that,"
Abby murmured, sighing again.
"I know Josiah said something about a clock, but whatever it was, it slipped my mind."
Silence descended over the room. Nancy was wondering what connection the timepiece could have with the missing will. Mrs. Rowan was staring at the clock, evidently still trying to probe her memory. Suddenly, she gave a low cry.
"There! It came to me just like that!"
"What, Mrs. Rowan?" Nancy urged quietly, lest she startle the old woman into forgetfulness.
"A notebook!"
Abby exclaimed triumphantly. Nancy's heart gave a leap, but she forced herself to say calmly, "Please, tell me more about this notebook."
"Well, one day, not long before he passed away, Josiah said to me, 'Abby, after I'm dead, if my last will isn't found, you can learn about it in this little book of mine.'"
"Do you know what became of the notebook, Mrs. Rowan?"
"Oh, dearie me, there goes my memory again. No, I don't."
Although baffled, Nancy felt a growing conviction that the whereabouts of the Crowley will was definitely tied up with a clock of some kind. But, she pondered, why did the striking of the mantel clock remind Abby Rowan of the notebook? Impulsively, Nancy got up and went over to the mantel. She looked inside the glass front and in the back. There were no papers inside. Returning to her chair, Nancy asked the elderly woman, "What became of the furnishings of the Crowley home when he gave it up?"
"The Tophams got most everything."
"There must have been a family clock," Nancy mused, half to herself.
"A family clock?" Abby repeated. "Oh, yes, there was a clock."
"Can you describe it?"
"It was just an ordinary mantel type. Something like mine. Tall, with a square face,"
the woman told Nancy.
"Only Josiah's was fancier. Had some kind of a moon on top."
"What became of the clock?" Nancy questioned.
"I suppose the Tophams got it, too."
At last Nancy, sure she had done all she could for Abby, and that she had learned as much as possible for the present, rose to depart. After saying goodbye, she stopped at a neighboring house and asked the occupants to look in occasionally on the ailing woman. "I think maybe one of the county's visiting nurses should see Mrs. Rowan," she suggested. "I'll phone the agency," the neighbor offered. "Meanwhile, I'll go over myself. I'm so sorry I didn't know about Mrs. Rowan." As Nancy drove toward River Heights, she jubilantly reviewed the new facts in the case. "Now, if I can only locate Mr. Crowley's notebook, or clock, or both." Nancy's brow knit in concentration. How would she go about tracking down the old timepiece? "I guess," she concluded, "if the Tophams do have the clock, I'll have to pay them a visit." While she did not relish the idea of calling on the unpleasant family, Nancy was determined to pursue every possible clue. "I can just see Ada's and Isabel's expressions when I appear at their front door," Nancy thought wryly. "Well, I'll think of some excuse to see them." She was still mulling over the problem when she pulled into the driveway of her home and heard a familiar voice calling her name.
"Why, Helen Corning!" exclaimed Nancy as a slim, attractive school friend of hers ran up. "I haven't seen you for days."
"I've been busy lately," Helen explained, "trying to sell 6 tickets for a charity ball, but I haven't had much luck. Would you like a couple?"
A sudden idea flashed into Nancy's mind at her friend's words. "Helen," she said excitedly, "I'll buy 2 of your tickets and sell the rest for you." The other girl stared in astonishment.
"Why, that's a wonderful offer, Nance, but..."
Nancy's eyes danced. "I know you think I've lost my mind. I really mean it, though. Please, let me take the tickets. I can't tell you my reasons yet, except my cause is a worthy one." Helen, looking relieved but bewildered, handed over the tickets. "This is really a break for me," she said. "Now I can leave for my aunt's Camp Avondale this evening as I'd hoped. It's at Moon Lake. I thought I'd never get off with those tickets unsold." Nancy smiled. "Have a grand time, Helen," she said. "How about coming along? It's not expensive, and there's room for lots more girls. We'd have loads of fun."
"I'd love to," Nancy replied, "but right now I can't get away."
"Maybe you can make it later," Helen suggested. "If so, just zip on up. I'll be there for 2 weeks before the regular summer camp opens."
The two friends chatted a little longer, then said goodbye. Nancy put the car away, then walked slowly toward her house, looking meditatively at the charity tickets in her hand. These are to be my passport to the Topham stronghold. It was the following afternoon when Nancy approached the large, pretentious house belonging to the Tophams. Bracing herself for what she realized would be a trying interview, Nancy mounted the steps and rang the doorbell. Here goes, she thought. I must be subtle in this maneuver to keep from arousing the Topham's suspicions. At that moment, a maid opened the door, and with a condescending look, waited for Nancy to state her mission. "Will you please tell Mrs. Topham that Nancy Drew is calling?" she requested. "I'm selling tickets for a charity dance. It's one of the most important functions of the year in River Heights," Nancy added impressively. It seemed ages to the young sleuth before the maid returned and said that Madame would see her. Nancy was ushered into the living room, which was so bizarre in its decor she was startled. "Such an expensive hodgepodge," Nancy observed to herself, sitting down. She glanced at the pink carpet, which to her clashed with the red window draperies, and at an indiscriminate assortment of period furniture mixed with modern. A haughty voice interrupted her thoughts. "Well, what do you want, Nancy?" Mrs. Topham had sailed grandly into the room and seated herself opposite Nancy. "I'm selling," Nancy began pleasantly. "Oh, if you're selling things, I'm not interested," the woman broke in rudely. "I can't be handing out money to every solicitor who comes along." With difficulty, Nancy suppressed an angry retort to the cutting remark. "Mrs. Topham," she said evenly, "perhaps your maid didn't make it clear. I am selling tickets to a charity ball, which will be one of the loveliest affairs in River Heights this year." "Oh!" A slight change came over Mrs. Topham's face. Nancy sensed that her words had struck a responsive chord. The woman was well known for her aspirations to be accepted by the best families in River Heights. "Well..." To Nancy's dismay, Mrs. Topham's response was cut off by the arrival of Ada and Isabel. The sisters entered the room, but did not at first notice Nancy's presence. They were intently carrying on a disgruntled conversation. "Really?" Ada was complaining. "I'm positive that woman snubbed us deliberately." Then she and Isabel caught sight of Nancy and stopped short. They stared coldly at the visitor. "What are you doing here?" Isabel asked with a patronizing air. Mrs. Topham answered her daughter's question. "Nancy is selling tickets to a charity dance, dear. It's to be a very important affair, and I think it will be beneficial for us to be present." Isabel tossed her head disdainfully. "Don't waste your money, mother." "Isabel's right," Ada chimed in. "We don't want to go to a ball just anybody can go to. We only attend the most exclusive affairs." "Absolutely," Isabel declared in her haughtiest tone. "After all, Ada and I are very particular about the people we choose to meet." Mrs. Topham hesitated, evidently influenced by her daughter's argument. Nancy's heart sank, and she feared her cause was lost. She fully realized that Ada and Isabel would stay away from the dance just to spite her. As she debated what her next move should be, Richard Topham walked into the living room. He was a thin man with sparse graying hair. His manner was rather nervous. Mrs. Topham perfunctorily introduced Nancy to her husband. "I gather you have some tickets to dispose of, Miss Drew," he said without ceremony. "How many?"
"Why, four," Nancy replied in some surprise.
"I'll take them all."
Mr. Topham opened his wallet with a flourish and drew out a $100 bill.
"Here you are. Keep the change for your charity."
His daughters gasped and his wife exclaimed, "Richard, have you lost your senses? All that money!"
"Listen," Mr. Topham retorted bluntly, "this donation will entitle us to have our names on the programs as patrons."
With this remark, he slumped into a chair and buried himself in the financial section of the newspaper. His family stared at one another, but they knew that the matter was closed. They never dared disturb him when he was absorbed in the stock market reports. Nancy arose reluctantly. She still had not accomplished the real purpose of her visit, but she had no excuse for prolonging her stay. How could she find out about the Crowley clock? Was it the one on the mantelpiece? "I must be going," she said. Then, looking at her wristwatch, she pretended that it had stopped and began to wind it. "What time is it, please?"
"There's a clock right in front of you on the mantel," Ada said sharply.
Nancy looked at the timepiece. "So there is," she remarked casually. "Is it an heirloom? Perhaps the old Crowley clock I've heard so much about?"
Mrs. Topham looked down her nose. "I should say not. This is a far more expensive one." Isabel also rose to Nancy's bait. Cousin Josiah's old clock was a monstrosity. We wouldn't even have it cluttering up the attic.
Nancy's hopes waned, but she asked quickly, "Oh, then you sold it?"
"No," Ada spoke up contemptuously. "Who'd give any money for that piece of junk? We sent it up to our bungalow at Moon Lake."
Moon Lake? The words hit Nancy like a thunderbolt. Not only had the Topham girl given Nancy the very information she sought, but Helen Corning's invitation to Camp Avondale provided a valid reason to visit the resort. Now, if she could only figure out how to see the old clock. As if Ada had read the visitor's thoughts, she said airily, "We have some really fine pieces up at the cottage, Nancy. If you ever get up that way, drop in and see them. The caretaker will show you around."
"Thank you. Thank you so much for everything," Nancy said, trying hard to conceal her excitement. As the door closed behind her, Nancy grinned in anticipation. "What luck," she told herself. "Moon Lake, here I come."
Chapter 10. Following a Clue. With soaring spirits, Nancy walked homeward. "I wonder," she thought, "how the Tophams will feel about Josiah Crowley's old clock if it costs them the inheritance they're counting on." At dinner that night, Nancy chatted with unusual animation, deciding not to tell of her exciting plans until after Hannah had served dessert. Mr. Drew, however, sensed that big news was coming. "My dear," he said, laying a hand on his daughter's arm, "you look like the cat that swallowed the canary. What's the big scoop?" Nancy giggled. "Oh, Dad, I can't keep any secrets from you." Then, as the table was cleared, the young sleuth told of her great stroke of luck. "And just think, Helen invited me to her aunt's camp." "Good," her father commented, smiling. "You can combine business with pleasure, Nancy. Swimming and boating and fun with the girls will provide a much-needed vacation."
"May I start first thing in the morning?" his daughter asked.
"An excellent idea, Nancy. The change will do wonders for you. Go, by all means." Hurriedly, she packed his suitcase, and the next morning was off to an early start. Moon Lake was about a 50-mile drive. One way to go was past the Hoover girls' farm, and Nancy decided to stop there. As she approached the house, the young sleuth heard singing. It was coming from the barn. "How beautiful," Nancy thought, as the clear soprano voice went through a series of trills and flute-like scales. In a moment, the singer appeared, and Nancy teasingly applauded. Allison's eyes danced.
"Thanks. I was just trying to imitate some of the greats."
"You'll be great yourself one of these days," Nancy prophesied.
"Not unless I get some money to finance lessons," Allison said.
"Any news, Nancy?"
"Sort of. I've had a little luck."
At this moment, Grace appeared and instantly invited Nancy to stay. But the young detective said she, too, had work to do.
"I hope to have a good report for you soon," she added, and waved goodbye.
Grace's face brightened, and Allison declared cheerfully, "Then there's still hope? We are so lucky to have you as a friend, Nancy. Come see us again soon, please." Resuming her journey, Nancy soon branched off from the river road and headed toward Moon Lake. As she drove along, her thoughts revolved constantly around the Crowley relatives and the Hoovers. She sighed. How different things would be for them now if Josiah Crowley hadn't been so secretive. Her reverie was ended by the sudden strange actions of her car. It kept veering to the left of the road in spite of her efforts to keep it in the middle. With foreboding, Nancy stopped and got out to make an inspection. As she had suspected, a rear tire was flat.
"Oh, dear," she murmured in disgust. "Such luck."
Though Nancy was able to change a tire, she never relished the task. Quickly, she took out the spare tire from the rear compartment, found the jack and lug wrench, and went to work. By the time her job was completed, she was hot and a little breathless.
"Phew!" she exclaimed as she started on her way again. "I'll be ready for a nice cool swim in Moon Lake."
It was after 12 o'clock when she came in sight of Camp Avondale, run by Helen's aunt. Through the tall trees, Nancy caught a glimpse of cabins and tents. Beyond,
The blue lake sparkled and glimmered in the sunlight. As Nancy drove into the camp, a group of girls gathered about her car. Helen came running out of a cabin to greet her chum.
"Girls, it's Nancy Drew!" she exclaimed joyfully and made introductions.
Nancy did not know any of the campers, but in no time they made her feel warmly welcome.
"Nancy," said Helen, "park your car back at the dining hall, then come have lunch."
"That sounds wonderful," Nancy laughed. "I'm nearly starved." First, she was escorted to the main building where she met Aunt Martha, the camp director, and registered.
"May she stay with me?" Helen asked.
"Certainly, dear.
And I hope you have a splendid time, Nancy."
"I'm sure I shall, Aunt Martha."
As the two girls walked off, Nancy told Helen about selling the charity dance tickets and gave her the money paid by Mr. Topham.
"He surely was generous," Helen commented in surprise. Then she smiled wryly.
"I have a feeling he did it more for social prestige than sympathy for the cause."
Nancy scarcely had time to deposit her suitcase under her cot and freshen up after the long ride when lunch was announced by the ringing of a bell. Campers hurried from all directions to the dining hall. The food was plain but appetizing, and Nancy ate with zest. The meal over, she was rushed from one activity to another. The girls insisted that she join them in a hike. Then came a cooling dip in the lake. Nancy enjoyed herself immensely, but the Crowley mystery was never far from her mind.
"I must find out where the Topham's cottage is located," she reminded herself, "and next, manage to go there alone."
Nancy's opportunity to accomplish the first part of her quest came when Helen suggested about 5 o'clock, "How about going for a ride around the lake and the camp launch? There's just time before supper."
"Wonderful," Nancy accepted readily. "By the way, can you see many of the summer cottages from the water?"
"Oh, yes, lots of them."
Helen led her friend down to a small dock, and with 4 other girls climbed into the launch, a medium-sized craft. As one of the campers started the motor, Helen remarked, "It's always a relief to us when this engine starts. Once in a while it balks, but you never know when or where."
"Yes," spoke up a girl named Barbie, "and when you're stuck this time of year, you're stuck. There are hardly any cottagers up here yet, so their boats are still in winter storage."
As the little launch turned out into the lake, Nancy was entranced with the beautiful sight before her. The delicate azure blue of the sky and the mellow gold of the late afternoon sun were reflected in the shimmering surface of the water. "What a lovely scene for an oil painting," she thought. As they sped along, however, Nancy kept glancing at the cottages, intermingled with tall evergreen trees that bordered the shoreline.
"The Tophams have a bungalow up here, haven't they?" she questioned casually.
"Yes, it's across the lake," Helen replied. "We'll come to it soon."
"Is anyone staying there now?"
"Oh, no, the cottage is closed. It's being looked after by Jeff Tucker, the caretaker. He's the tallest, skinniest man I've ever seen outside a circus."
"Is it hard to get to the place?"
"Not if you go by launch, but it's a long way if you take the road around the lake." Helen looked at her friend.
"I didn't know you were particularly interested in the Tophams, Nancy."
"Oh, they're not friends of mine, as you know," Nancy returned hastily.
"I was merely curious."
After a time, as the launch slowed down and chugged along close to shore, Helen pointed out a wide path through the woods. At the end of it stood a large, rambling, white cottage.
"That's the Topham place," she said.
Trying not to appear too eager, Nancy looked intently at the bungalow. She made a quick mental note of its location. "Tomorrow I'll visit that place and try to solve the mystery," she told herself.
Chapter 11. An Unexpected Adventure. Nancy awoke the next morning to the fragrant odor of pines. Eager to start out for the Topham bungalow, she dressed quickly. But in her plan, she had reckoned without Helen Corning and her friends. From the moment breakfast was over, Nancy was swept into another whirlwind of activity by the campers of Avondale. The entire day passed without a chance for her to break away.
"Oh, Helen," Nancy groaned as she tumbled into bed that night. "Tennis matches, canoe races, swimming, water skiing. It's been fun. But tomorrow I think I'll stay out of the activities."
Helen laughed gaily. "You'll change your mind after a sound sleep, Nancy. Wait and see."
For answer, Nancy murmured a sleepy good night. But even as she slipped into slumber, she vowed that in the morning she would not be deterred again from visiting the Topham's summer place. After breakfast the next day, Nancy stood firm in her resolve. When Helen urged her to accompany the girls on an all-day hike, Nancy shook her head.
"Thanks a lot, but please excuse me today, Helen."
Normally, Nancy would have loved going on such a hike. but she had to achieve her plan of sleuthing. Helen, though disappointed, heeded her friend's plea and trudged off with the other campers into the woods. As soon as they were out of sight, Nancy leaped into action. After obtaining Aunt Martha's permission to use the launch, she hurried down to the dock. Nancy had frequently handled motorboats and was confident she could manage this one. Now, full speed ahead for the Tophams. To her delight, the motor started immediately, and Nancy steered out into the lake. As the launch cut through the water, a cool spray blew into her face. The young sleuth felt a thrill of excitement as she guided the craft toward her destination, which might hold a solution to the mystery. If only the Topham's caretaker will let me in when I get there, she thought. Nancy's heart beat somewhat faster as she neared her goal. But all of a sudden, there was a sputter from the engine. The next instant, to Nancy's utter dismay, the motor gave one long wheeze and died. Oh, she cried aloud. Nancy knew that the tank held plenty of fuel, for she had checked this before departing. A moment later, she recalled Helen's remark about the engine becoming bulky at times. With a sigh of impatience at the unexpected delay, Nancy examined the motor. For over an hour, she worked on it, trying every adjustment she could think of. But her efforts were useless. There was not a sound of response from the motor. What miserable luck, she said aloud. Of all days for the motor to conk out. This means I won't get to the Topham Cottage after all. For a moment, Nancy was tempted to swim ashore. To be so close to the bungalow and not be able to reach it was tantalizing. But she resisted the impulse. She could not leave the boat stranded. It would drift off, and she would be responsible. I'll just have to wait for a passing boat to rescue me, Nancy decided. But fate was against her. The hours dragged by, and not another craft appeared in sight. Nancy became increasingly uncomfortable as the hot sun beat down on her. Also, she was growing weak from hunger. And worst of all, Nancy thought gloomily, another whole day is being wasted. I want to get to the bottom of this mystery. To occupy her mind, Nancy concentrated once more on the motor. Determinedly, she bent over the engine. It was not until the sun sank low in the sky that she sat up and drew a long breath. There, she declared, I've done everything. If it doesn't start now, it never will. To her relief and astonishment, it responded with a steady roar as if nothing had ever gone wrong. Nancy lost no time in heading back toward camp. She dared not attempt to visit the bungalow, since it would be dark very soon. When finally she eased up to the dock, Nancy saw Helen and her friends awaiting her. They greeted her with delight. We were just going to send out a search party for you, Helen exclaimed. She stopped abruptly and stared at her friend. You're sunburned and covered with grease. What happened? Nancy laughed. I had an extended sunbath. Then she gave a light-hearted account of her mishap as the campers trooped back to their cabins. When Helen learned that Nancy had had nothing to eat since breakfast, she went to the kitchen and brought back some food. The following morning, the young sleuth decided on her next move. Directly after breakfast, she began packing. When Helen entered the cabin, she exclaimed in amazement, Why, Nancy Drew, you're not leaving camp already. I'm afraid I'll have to, Helen, right after lunch. I may be back, but I'm not sure, so I better take my bag with me. Don't you like it here? Of course, Nancy assured her. I've had a wonderful time. It's just that there's something very important I must attend to at once. Helen looked at her friend searchingly, then grinned. Nancy Drew, you're working on some mystery with your father. Well, sort of, Nancy admitted. But I'll try to get back, okay? Oh, please do, Helen begged. Nancy went to the office to pay Aunt Martha and explain her hasty departure. After lunch, she set off in her car to a chorus of farewells from the campers who sadly watched her depart. She headed the car toward the end of the lake, then took the dirt road leading to the Topham Cottage. Soon, she came to a fork in the woods. Now, which way shall I turn for the bungalow? She wondered. After a moment's hesitation, Nancy calculated that she should turn left toward the water and did so. The going was rather rough due to ruts in the road. Two of them, deeper than the others, apparently had been made by a heavy truck. The tracks appear fresh, Nancy mused. As she drove along, the young sleuth noticed a number of summer cottages. Most of them were still boarded up, since it was early in the season. As she gazed at one of them, the steering wheel was nearly wrenched from her hand by a crooked rut. As Nancy turned the steering wheel to bring the car back to the center of the narrow road, one hand accidentally touched the horn. It blared loudly in the still woods. That must have scared all the birds and animals, Nancy chuckled.
Around a bend in the road, she caught sight of a white bungalow ahead on the right side of the road. There was no sign at the entrance to the driveway to indicate who the owner was, but a wooded path leading down to the lake looked like the one she had seen from the water. "I think I'll walk down to the shore and look at the cottage from there," Nancy determined. "Then I'll know for sure if this is the place Helen pointed out." Nancy parked at the edge of the road and got out. To her surprise, she observed that the truck's tire marks turned into the driveway. A second set of tracks indicated that the vehicle had backed out and gone on down the road. "Delivering supplies for the summer, no doubt," Nancy told herself. She went down the path to the water, then turned around to look at the cottage. "It's the Topham's, all right," Nancy decided. Instead of coming back by way of the path, she decided to take a shortcut through the woods. With mounting anticipation of solving the Crowley mystery, she reached the road and hurried up the driveway. "I hope the caretaker is here," she thought. Nancy suddenly stopped short with a gasp of astonishment. Why, the Topham's must be moving out. The front and side doors of the cottage stood wide open. Some of the furniture on the porch was overturned, and various small household items were strewn along the driveway. Nancy bent to examine some marks in the soft earth. She noted that several were boot prints, while others were long lines probably caused by dragging cartons and furniture across the lawn. "That must have been a moving van's tracks I saw," Nancy told herself. But the Topham's didn't say anything about moving. She frowned in puzzlement. Her feeling persisted and grew strong as she walked up the steps of the cottage porch. Nancy knocked loudly on the open door. No response. Nancy rapped again. Silence. Where was Jeff Tucker, the caretaker? Why wasn't he on hand to keep an eye on the moving activities? An air of complete desertion hung over the place. "There's something very strange about this," she thought. Curious and puzzled, Nancy entered the living room. Again, her eyes met a scene of disorder. Except for a few small pieces, the room was bare of furniture. Even the draperies had been pulled from their rods and all floor coverings were gone. Most of the furnishings have been taken out, Nancy thought. I suppose the movers will be back for the other odds and ends. She made a careful tour of the first floor. All but one room had been virtually emptied. This was a small study. As Nancy entered it, she noticed that the rug lay rolled up and tied, and some of the furniture had evidently been shifted in readiness for moving. "Funny I didn't hear anything about the Topham's deciding to give up their cottage," she murmured. "And I must say those moving men were awfully careless." A vague suspicion that had been forming in the back of Nancy's mind now came into startling focus. "Those men may not be movers," she burst out. "They may be thieves." At once, Nancy thought of the dark gray van which had stopped at the Turners. Those men may be the same ones who robbed them. That would explain, Nancy thought fearfully, the evidences of the truck's hasty departure. Probably the thieves were scared away when I sounded my horn. Nancy glanced about uneasily. What if the men were still nearby, watching for a chance to return and pick up the remaining valuables? The realization that she was alone, some distance from the nearest house, swept over her. A tingling sensation crept up Nancy's spine. But resolutely, she shook off her nervousness. "At least I must see if the Crowley clock is still here," Nancy reminded herself, and then went through the bungalow again. She found no trace of the timepiece, however. "I guess the thieves took that, too," Nancy concluded. "I better report this robbery to the police right now." She looked about for a phone, but there was none. "I'll have to drive to the nearest state police headquarters." Nancy started toward the front door. Passing a window, she glanced out, then paused in sheer fright. A man, wearing a cap pulled low over his eyes, was stalking up the driveway toward the cottage. He was not tall and slender like the caretaker. This stranger was rather short and heavy-set. "This man fits the Turner's description. He must be one of the thieves who stole the silver heirlooms," Nancy thought wildly. Chapter 12. A Desperate Situation. For a moment, Nancy stood frozen to the spot, positive that the man who was coming to the Topham cottage was one of the thieves. But she hesitated only an instant. Then she turned and ran back into the study. Too late, she realized that she had trapped herself, for this room had no other door. Nancy started back toward the living room, but before she had taken half a dozen steps, she knew that escape had been cut off from that direction. The man had reached the porch steps. It won't do a bit of good to talk to him, she reasoned. I'll hide, and when he leaves, I'll follow him in my car and report him to the police. Frantically, the young sleuth glanced about for a hiding place. A closet offered the only possible refuge. She scurried inside and closed the door. Nancy was not a second too soon. She had scarcely shut the door when she heard the tread of a man's heavy shoes on the floor just outside. Peeping cautiously through a tiny crack in the door, she saw the heavy-set man come into the study. His face wore a cruel expression. As he turned toward the closet where she huddled, Nancy hardly dared to breathe, lest her presence be detected. Apparently, the man noticed nothing amiss, because his eyes rested only casually on the door. Nancy's hiding place was anything but comfortable. It was dark and musty, and old clothing hung from nails on the walls. As dust assailed her nostrils, she held a handkerchief to her face. "If I sneeze, he'll surely find me," she told herself. She felt around, and once came close to ripping her hand on a sharp nail. Then she came upon something soft on a shelf, and imagined it was a sleeping cat. She drew back, then touched it more cautiously. "Only an old fur cap," she told herself in disgust. "Ugh, now I feel like sneezing more than ever." She held one hand over her mouth hard and waited in agony. But presently, the desire to sneeze passed, and Nancy breathed more freely. When she dared to peep out through the crack a second time, she saw that two other rough-looking men had come into the room. One was short and stout, the other taller. Nancy was sure that neither of these two men was the caretaker, because Helen Corning had mentioned that the man was skinny. The heavy-set man who had come in first seemed to be the leader, for he proceeded to issue orders.
"Get a move on," he growled. "We haven't got all day unless we want to be caught. That girl you saw, Jake, may be back any time from the shore, and she just might get snoopy."
The man addressed as Jake scowled.
"What's the matter with you, Sid? Going chicken? If the girl comes around, we'll just give her a smooth story and send her on her way." "Cut out the yakking," said Sid. "Parky, you and Jake take that desk out of here."
There was no doubt now in Nancy's mind. She was trapped by a clever gang of thieves. She could only continue to watch and listen helplessly from her hiding place. The two men lifted the heavy piece of furniture and started with it to the door. But they did not move swiftly enough to satisfy the leader, and he berated them savagely. Jake turned on him.
"If you're in such a hurry, why don't you bring the van back to the driveway instead of leaving it hidden on that road in the woods? And have someone driving past here see us?" sneered the leader. "Now get going."
Little by little, the men stripped the room of everything valuable. Nancy was given no opportunity to escape. Sid remained in the room while the others made several trips to the van.
"Well, I guess we have all the stuff that's worth anything now," Sid muttered at last.
He turned to follow his companions, who already had left the room, but in the doorway he paused for a final careful survey of the room. At that same moment, Nancy felt an uncontrollable urge to sneeze. She tried to muffle the sound, but to no avail. The thief wheeled about.
"Hey, what?"
Walking directly to the closet, he flung open the door. Instantly, he spotted Nancy and angrily jerked her out.
"Spying on us, eh?" he snarled.
Nancy faced the man defiantly. "I wasn't spying on anyone."
"Then what were you doing in that closet?"
the thief demanded, his eyes narrowing to slits.
"I came to see the caretaker."
"Looking for him in a funny place, ain't you?"
the man sneered. Nancy realized that she was in a desperate situation, but she steeled herself not to show any of her inward fears.
"I must keep calm," she told herself firmly.
Aloud, she explained coolly, "I heard someone coming, and I just felt a bit nervous."
"Well, you're going to be a lot more nervous," the man said threateningly. "This will be the last time you'll ever stick your nose in business that doesn't concern you."
A fresh wave of fright swept over Nancy, but resolutely she held on to her courage.
"You have no right to be here helping yourself to the Topham's furniture," she retorted. "You should be turned over to the police."
"Well, you'll never get the chance to do it," the ringleader laughed loudly. "You'll wish you'd never come snooping around here. I'll give you the same treatment the caretaker got."
"The caretaker?" Nancy gasped in horror. "What have you done to him?"
"You'll find out in good time."
Nancy gave a sudden agile twist, darted past the man, and raced for the door. The thief gave a cry of rage, and in one long leap overtook her. He caught Nancy roughly by the arm.
"Think you're smart, eh?" he snarled. "Well, I'm smarter."
Nancy struggled to get away. She twisted and squirmed, kicked and clawed. But she was helpless in the vice-like grip of the powerful man. "Let me go!" Nancy cried, struggling harder. "Let me go!" Sid, ignoring her pleas, half-dressed.